Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for supporting public broadcasting in your community. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, this week, officials at the University of Florida in Gainesville have been busy trying to douse a political firestorm. The school is being heavily criticized for trying to block three professors from testifying in a lawsuit that is challenging the state's new voting rights law. Now, political science professors Sharon Wright Austin, Michael McDonald, and Daniel Smith are all experts in election law. But UF said they could not be paid expert witnesses in a lawsuit that argues that Florida's new election law harms voting rights. School officials say their testimony would go against UF's interest by conflicting with the administration of Governor Ron DeSantis.
Now, this move to stop professors from being paid expert witnesses in public trials is really unusual. In a letter to the university, lawyers representing the professors said that faculty members retain their First Amendment rights to free speech, even if their remarks may, quote, make a university's relationship with funding sources more difficult, end quote. Now, UF has backtracked a little bit as the story has gained attention. It now says the professors could testify but not be paid or use university resources. Since the university's decision was disclosed in a federal court filing, five more UF professors have come forward to say they too were barred from testifying in other cases or ordered to leave out any mention of their university positions in court statements.
And there's more, Tom. The University of Florida has been asked by its accrediting body to explain how denying a request by the professors to serve as paid experts in the lawsuit conforms to standards for academic freedom. And also, there's the question of potential undue political influence. On Monday, the university's president and provost ordered a review of its policy on conflicts of interest.
Yeah, this story has been moving fast this week, Melissa. 10 members of Florida's Democratic congressional delegation sent a letter to the University of Florida president Ken Fox on Tuesday condemning the decision. And coming up on this program, we will be speaking with U.S. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, herself a graduate of the University of Florida and one who signed that letter. We want to hear from you throughout the conversation as well. 305-995-1800 across the state of Florida here on this Friday afternoon, live at 305-995-1800. Find us on Twitter as well. Our handle there is at Florida Roundup.
A robust discussion on freedom of speech and academic freedom. First, let's hear from the academics and election experts at the center of the storm as we welcome UF professors Sharon Wright Austin and Michael McDonald. Good to have you both on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you both so much. Professor Austin, let's begin with you. Now, the lawsuit against the state's voting rights law claims it's too restrictive, especially when it comes to placing, in its argument, undue burden on voters of color. You specialize in that field of study. So what are your thoughts about being told your testimony would not be allowed in the lawsuit?
I was really just shocked when I was informed that my request to participate as an expert witness had been denied. I was very disappointed in the decision for a number of reasons.
And would the foremost reason be that it's just a principle of the academic world that professors shouldn't be beholden to political whims? Is that at the heart of your argument?
Right. I think as a private citizen, I mean, I have a constitutional right to engage in this type of work. So I felt like it was definitely a violation of my First Amendment rights and also just a violation of academic freedom just in general. And so that was just mainly the problem that I had with it as a private citizen. I believe that I should have been able to participate in this because it in no way conflicted with the work that I do. I did not use university resources, and I was really very surprised when I heard the decision.
UF now says you and your colleagues can testify as long as you don't get paid. What's your reaction to that? And will you go ahead and give your expert testimony for free?
Well, I would say that we were never told at the very beginning that it had anything to do with compensation. And so I was really surprised in a few days ago when I read that that was what the university's statement was. And also they have yet to have directly told me anything about compensation or anything else. But mainly, I think the main thing that I'm concerned with is academic freedom and the fact that I have a right, not as a professor, but just as a private individual, to do this type of work, and to deny me of that right, regardless of whether I'm compensated or not, is a violation of my constitutional right. So that is my main objection.
It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about the political firestorm at UF. You know, according to the Chronicle of Higher Education, court records show that the Republican National Committee and the National Republican Senatorial Committee hired a professor from FIU, a guy named Dario Moreno, as an expert witness in the lawsuit. So that professor is apparently being allowed to testify as a paid expert witness, but on behalf of the state, causing charges of hypocrisy to be leveled against this decision. Let's bring in Professor Michael McDonald. He is not only a statewide expert on American elections, he's got a national footprint through his project, electproject.org. Professor McDonald, thank you for being with us. So what are your thoughts about the issues raised here? Critics call this an ominous silencing of free speech and academic freedom, that it has a chilling effect on our values as a democracy. Do you agree with that? And tell us why you and your colleagues have decided to challenge this decision.
Well, you know, I'm speechless. I mean, literally speechless, according to the university, in that I am not being allowed to speak on matters of great import to the public good. And that's part of the University of Florida's mission statement, that we as faculty members and as a university are here not just for the government of Florida, but also for the citizens. And when we became public employees, we took an oath to uphold not the state government, but the Constitution, both of Florida and the United States. And so our mission, as I see it, and the mission of the university, as it's stated, is for the public good. And it really is concerning to me that the university would decide that we would not be able to speak out if the interests of the university and really the interests of the state were at difference from the sort of speech that we would like to make.
Governor Ron DeSantis has said through a spokesperson that he had nothing to do with this decision. That said, there are a number of the governor's supporters on the board at University of Florida, including major donors to him. And so, Professor McDonald, do you feel that you and your colleagues have been subjected to undue political influence?
We simply don't know. We're just trying to stand up for our own rights, and that's what we're doing with this. And we don't know the decisions and internal discussions that have been made that led up to this decision.
Let me ask you both about the federal judge overseeing this matter and some recent statements he made about the case. Michael McDonald, you've been tweeting about that. Tell us what the judge had to say about this so far.
Well, we have to understand there's really two things that are going on here. There's a lawsuit that's challenging the laws that were adopted just recently this year around the voting, and that the coalition of different voting rights organizations are the ones who are the plaintiffs in that case. They wanted to depose the governor's office about issues, not just with respect to us, but larger issues involved in the case. So ours is one part of it, which came to light in the last couple weeks once the university had denied our participation in the case. The governor's office decided, well, we're going to exert legislative privilege or executive privilege and not reveal any communications that we've had or do any testimony. And that was a issue that then was challenged by the plaintiffs. And so that challenge came last week, and that's really what prompted everything about this the public nature of our disagreement with the university. Up to that point, before last Friday, we had been trying to negotiate and try to come to some agreement with the university about our situation, because they had denied us to work, flat-out denial, before that filing went public. And when that filing went public, the New York Times wrote its story about the situation, because now it was a public matter. And it was at that point that the university changed its position about our participation. They said that we could do this if we're not, as long as we're not compensated. And we had to ask them, what's going on here? And we had to do that through lawyers. We couldn't even, they did not communicate that to us directly. They just made these public statements. So I really view those public statements they've been making are more PR than they are a real change in the university's position. And so that's where we are now. What happened on yesterday is that the judge in this case, Judge Walker, in the voting rights case, issued a ruling whether or not the governor's office could be protected under executive privilege, and he said yes, they could. But then he wrote an extensive footnote where he said, "But I reserve that." Essentially, paraphrasing him, I reserve the right to revisit this issue if it comes to matters of similar or civil or criminal matters that might be related to trying to suppress witnesses that are coming before the court. And we are expert witnesses. That's what we are. So there's it's a very stunning statement from a judge, and it's clearly touching on the university's refusal to let us testify, and whether or not, criminal matters could be involved here, I don't know. I don't, we don't have any evidence to that effect. It's just quite stunning that you would have a federal judge raise those issues and specifically cite our situation.
We're speaking with UF political science professors Sharon Wright Austin and Michael McDonald, both experts on election law. They were told they could not testify in a lawsuit challenging Florida's voting law. Critics say it's too restrictive and places an undue burden on some voters to cast a ballot. 305-995-1800.
305-995-1800. Bill in Jacksonville has a question. Go ahead, Bill. You're on the radio. Bill, can you hear us? Bill cannot hear us.
Guess not.
The professors. Bill's question, though, is whether or not you volunteered or you were solicited for your participation in the lawsuit. Professor Austin, were you contacted by attorneys or did you volunteer?
I was contacted by attorneys to serve as an expert witness.
And Professor McDonald?
Yeah, the same. And it's kind of an important question because if we were volunteering, and that's now the public position of the university, that we volunteer to work on these cases, then we are no longer expert witnesses, we're advocates. So, as a legal matter, the compensation is actually tied to whether or not we are dispassionate experts who are evaluating the facts of the case versus advocates who are volunteering our time to work on behalf of the plaintiffs in a case.
Professor Austin, go into that distinction a little bit more. It's an important distinction that your colleague makes there, particularly when it comes to pay, but also when it comes to the type of testimony you offer as a paid expert and which side of a lawsuit perhaps pays. How does that affect, if at all, the testimony?
Well, I think the one thing that I want to point out in answering your question is that we're providing expertise, and it's not so much that we're taking any particular side. I can't talk at length about the report that I submitted, but it is a report that is a factual report that talks about voting discrimination generally in the state of Florida. So it's not a case in which I've taken any particular side. I was just asked to do research, and mm-hmm. I did it. And so as a paid expert, you're being compensated for your expertise because this is something that is very time consuming. But if you do this on a volunteer basis, then you're not necessarily an expert. As Professor McDonald just said, you would more so be just a volunteer,
right,
who's an advocate, and that's not what they're looking for. They're looking for people who have studied and researched this topic, who can provide that type of expertise.
Antonio in Gainesville, you are up next on the radio. Go ahead, Antonio. On the blue line, Peter, if we have the blue line.
They are supposed to be neutral, and it's also the same matter. And I'm just very shocked about the position of the university. As a graduate of the university, I feel sad and ashamed.
Antonio, thanks for that phone call. Professors, what has been the reaction amongst the students that you're still in the classroom with this week?
Well, I think I can say that, I have refused to discuss it with my students. So I'm not sure what their reaction has been, because I just continue to teach my class as if this wasn't happening, and I did not mention it to my students.
Here's a tweet from a listener. The governor is stifling free speech. UF is discrediting itself. We'll lose talent and support from their effort to prevent free speech, particularly on a vital issue such as voting disenfranchisement. As a parent of a UF Young Alumni Award winner, I'm very disappointed with UF. Professor McDonald, what about the fact that the school's accreditation is now up for discussion over this matter? Do you think this could lead to a chilling effect in attracting top talent to the university, maybe scaring off some professors? By the way, the UF Alligator is reporting right now that University of Florida's president is asking the UF Conflict of Interest Office to reverse its decision to bar the professors from testifying against the state. Your president is requesting they be allowed to receive compensation. That just hit, guys. So your reaction?
Well, I'd have to look more at that statement before I could give you a response to it, unfortunately, because we're in a legal situation, not a PR situation.
I see.
Professor, I would say the same, yeah.
But
I would say the same. I don't know. This is the first I've heard of that, so I don't really know exactly what this is.
Yeah, it does seem, though, that all of the interest and controversy around this controversial decision has certainly placed pressure on the leadership at the University of Florida in Gainesville. And so, of course, as you mentioned, you are limited somewhat in what you can say due to legal considerations. But that said, it's great to speak with you, because in a free society, in a small d democracy, these issues matter. They are central to our democracy, our way of life, the freedoms that we all value. So I want to thank you both, Sharon Wright Austin and Michael McDonald, both experts in election law and professors of political science at the University of Florida. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
And of course, Tom, we have more to come on this.
Indeed, we do. We want to hear more of your phone calls at 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800. We'll also hear from a member of Florida's congressional delegation and a University of Florida graduate herself about this developing situation next.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. The University of Florida student newspaper reports this hour that the University of Florida president Kent Fox is asking the school's Conflict of Interest Office to now allow three professors to testify in a case that has the state defending its new voting law. Those professors had been barred from getting paid for their expert testimony. We learned that over the weekend in a federal court filing. It had created, still creating quite a firestorm. We just heard from two of those professors. The University of Florida student newspaper also reporting that the university wants to or is asking to allow for those three professors to get paid for their expert testimony. 305-995-1800. Line up your phone calls now. We're going to get to them in just a few moments. We want to hear from Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's one of the 10 Democratic members of Florida's congressional delegation who wrote a letter to the UF president this week calling on the university to allow for those professors to testify. We spoke with her this morning. Congresswoman, welcome back to Florida Public Radio. Are you satisfied that the University of Florida will allow the professors to testify but just not get paid?
No, that's an unacceptable alternative. If the university is suggesting that the professor's participation in this case is a conflict of interest or, you know, against the interests of the university, then I fail to understand what the difference is in terms of their being compensated or doing the work pro bono. Either it's a, you know, adverse interest to the university or it's not. And frankly, that's a ridiculous argument. Having our university professors who have, you know, national and international expertise testify in cases in court, as these professors have done many times and have been approved by the University of Florida to do so, brings, you know, enhanced reputation and stature to the university.
Does the university have the right to protect its interests as it sees fit?
The university is obligated, as an academic institution and a public university at that, to uphold the constitutional rights and freedom of expression of the university professors that work there. This decision on the university's part is unconstitutional. It flies directly in the face of a Supreme Court decision that specifically said that professors have the First Amendment right, an obligation to express their opinion, even when they might be affecting the resources, even state resources or other public funding sources of the university. So this is an unacceptable decision, and the real villain here is Ron DeSantis. He could end this today. It's very clear that whether it was direct or indirect, that the governor's office intimidated and bullied the university into believing that there would be an adverse interest and that there would be consequences if they allow their university professors to testify in cases that are against the state of Florida.
Congresswoman, does Congress have a role here? And if so, what would it be?
Well, I think more likely the court system will get involved here. The governor could end this today by saying that this is not a problem. So could the university. I led the delegation letter that was signed by all 10 Democratic members of Congress that asked questions of the president and urged him to reverse this unfortunate decision. And if they don't, if that isn't the result, then we certainly could, and I would think will, start to shine a greater spotlight here in Washington through legislative hearings. I'm hoping it doesn't come to that.
If the school prohibited a professor from testifying in support of the voting law, would you oppose that as well?
I don't think a professor should be prohibited in either direction from using their expertise, which is why the university employs them, from testifying in a case on either side of the case.
Gotcha. U.S. Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, representative from South Florida, and a UF grad, is that right?
Yes. Three generations of my family are University of Florida graduates or students.
Congresswoman, thank you so much for your time.
305-995-1800. Here's a tweet from Charles. UF should lose accreditation over this. The president should resign or be fired. It's too little or too late. This is typical interference in freedom of speech, he says, from Florida Republicans. He says their goal of voter suppression of a large segment of Florida's population. Okay, Daniel is on the line from Tampa. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, this is a bad decision. It opens a precedent for the entire judicial system. Can a hospital impede a doctor from being an expert witness? Can and an electric company impede the worker from being an expert witness if there's a case involving their expertise? And the second, can they impede them from making money on the side? Say, can a professor give classes on the side or run seminars or do speeches? So it's a bad decision on two sides, suppressing expert opinion and impeding them from making money without conflict with the university.
Daniel, yeah, thanks for your thoughts. And you know, Tom, this whole flap has become a national story for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that the governor has become a polarizing figure, popular on the right, criticized on the left. Critics saw this whole affair as a referendum on his leadership one way or the other here in Florida, and the way critics say anyway, that he has tried to bend institutions to his will and in service, they say, of his political ambitions. But what's remarkable is the way UF has now reversed itself in light of the pressure.
Indeed, the student publication on campus at the University of Florida, the Alligator, reporting that the university president is now asking for its conflict of interest office to reverse its decision and allow those professors to testify in the case and be paid.
Well, here's the other big story of the week. In little more than a week, a special legislative session will be gaveled in. Governor DeSantis called for the session for lawmakers to consider a series of bills inspired by the pandemic. Now, these are measures that would ban companies from requiring workers to be vaccinated against COVID, and they would strengthen parents' rights to make their own decisions for their children about vaccines and masks. The one-week session comes on the heels of the Biden administration announcing a federal mandate for large companies with 100 workers or more to require either vaccinations or weekly testing. This rule would go into effect early next year. DeSantis was quick to announce Florida would sue the federal government over the requirement.
People are so sick of constantly being bossed around, restricted, mandated, all these different things. We've had enough of it, and we want people to be able to make their own decisions.
Now, some Republican legislators have cast doubt on just how far the legislature may be willing to go in dealing with private company vaccine mandates. House co-minority leader Democrat Evan Jenny thinks the governor may not get the kind of ban on mandates that he wants.
I have a feeling that some business entities that may be quite important to folks in this building have said, hey, we don't appreciate what you're doing here. So I think you're going to see that scale back a little bit.
Just one of the many issues upcoming in the special legislative session a week from Monday. Does your company have a vaccine requirement or a testing requirement in place? What do you think about it? Join the conversation at 305-995-1800. Statewide at 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup.
To give us his thoughts on the special session, we're pleased to welcome State Representative Anthony Sabatini, Republican of Lake County, Florida. He's also a candidate for Congress in Florida District 7. Representative Sabatini, a pleasure to have you on the show. Okay, Representative Sabatini, can you hear us?
Yes, absolutely. Can you hear me?
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for being with us. So, the special session coming up soon, but we still don't know much in the way of details. When might any proposed bills be filed? What do you think the specifics will be?
Well, I think they should absolutely have been filed by now. It's kind of shameful that they're holding on to them. I do know that there's an enormous amount of dissension between the governor and the Republican leadership in the legislature, which is, I think, far more under the sway of some of the big corporations in our state than the governor is, and I am for that matter. So, you know, they're probably still negotiating what the final product is going to look like. The governor put out a spreadsheet, a sort of a bullet pointed list of what he wanted to see. And, you know, the legislature doesn't always show its cards, but it did say some key leaders in the legislature did reveal in the last 2 weeks that they disagree with even the mild version of what the governor wanted to put forward. So there's already an enormous amount of dissension.
Interesting. Well, tell us more about that, because it sounds as though you're saying some of your colleagues in the legislature see things more along the lines of the argument that businesses might should be able to decide for themselves how best to manage the health and safety of their workforce. So what about that argument?
Oh, absolutely. I think traditionally one of the best principles you can have is letting businesses run themselves. But when they begin a new process or a new, sort of new mode of trying to dictate the private aspects of their employees' lives and interfere in serious ways with the autonomy and liberty of people in their own private life, that's just absolutely wrong. And we need to be realistic about that. And it's time to really crack down on that and stop it. And some of these Republicans who have their donations, receive a majority of their donations from these large corporations are going to give a bad faith argument that, you know, they need to, quote unquote, continue their conservative principles and allow these businesses to do what they want. But it's just wrong. It's on its face wrong. These big woke companies are now dictating very private aspects of people's lives, not only telling them that they have no medical freedom, but they also have no medical privacy, that they need to go to, let's say it's Disney, for example, they need to go to the HR office and say, here's my medical history, here's what I've decided to do, et cetera. Even the inquiry into their medical privacy, I think, is a total infringement of their liberty.
Well, let me ask you though, like, why do you, if you don't want to get a vaccine, say you work for Citibank, for example, I wouldn't necessarily characterize them as a woke company. They're a banking company. If you don't want to get a vaccine, you just get a weekly test to make sure that you're not jeopardizing your colleagues. How is that unreasonable? You're not being forced to get a vaccine. You're just being asked to get tested if you don't want to be vaccinated.
It's extremely unreasonable for that reason in itself. There is no reason to it. They simply are saying, hey, you know, we want to react to the media's call for having a basically a permanent emergency in society. 18 months after the, COVID emergence, we're going to continue to act like we're still in a state of emergency and treat these employees as second class citizens. While although they're capable and do everything everybody else wants to do, they have to go jump through extra legal hoops and have new conditions of employment imposed on them because they don't want to be vaccinated. The vaccine is free, widely accessible. Anyone can do it. They personally don't want to do it, and they shouldn't be punished for doing so. The test is really just a punishment, and it's a way for these big woke companies, and yes, Citibank.
How is it a punishment, though, to keep your workers alive and out of the hospital? Doesn't that interest override the minor inconvenience of a test?
Quite frankly, that's not the origin of why they're doing this. It's not the reason for why they're doing this. The reason these companies are doing this is not to protect workers. Any worker could at any given time go out and do it. The reason they're doing it is because they'll be attacked and severely attacked by the media as having a quote unquote unsafe workplace if they allow people to run their own lives. The precedent that's being created by this is that companies need to babysit and basically be the nanny state now in the lives of every one of their employees. It's indignifying. It's disgusting. It should be prohibited under law.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Let's go to
305.
Go ahead.
305-995-1800, talking about the special session vaccine requirements with private companies. With your phone calls, 305-995-1800 with Representative Sabatini. Let's see here. Terry in Melbourne on line 3. Terry, thanks for calling. You are on the radio.
Well, I can't tell you how turned off I am by the things that Sabatini said in his long-winded way. I'm 81 years old, sitting down here in Melbourne. I would like to see an end of COVID. Goodness, we've only lost 750,000 people. And here we have a governor and various and sundry politicians using politics as their criterion in terms of public health decisions. It's just completely unacceptable to me.
Terry, thanks for adding your voice. Representative Sabatini, what do you say to Terry in Melbourne?
Well, I will tell you this, you know, I'm giving arguments that often don't, I think aren't as expressed as frequently. A lot of Republicans are afraid to basically go back to first principles and just, you know, go back to the idea of making an argument based on freedom. You know, I'm looking at this as a freedom issue. I care more about the freedom, autonomy, and individual choice making of a normal working Floridian than I do about the C-suite of a woke corporation.
Do you care more about that freedom than, say, an 81-year-old in Melbourne who's concerned about public health?
That person can be vaccinated for free at any time. Most vaccination sites are 15 minutes from anyone's home. They get to choose. It's not, listen, I'm here to secure rights and protect freedom as a government official.
That's in a right to work state, isn't it the right for a company to choose what policies it's going to employ people under?
So you care more. This is an interesting argument. I love seeing people down the.
To be clear, I'm not arguing. I'm simply asking questions to hear a little bit more from you.
Well, it's clear what the assumption and the statement of the questioner is, and by the question, it's just obvious. But I will tell you, it is very entertaining to watch people on the left now become free market extremists and say that no regulation on a company is ever going to be valid, and that we need to uphold the corporate. Freedom of corporations to dictate anything they want to their employees upon, you know, at all. Meanwhile, they're generally pushing as many mandates and regulations on corporations as historically possible. It's a bad faith argument. Listen, the left is making really bad faith arguments about the free market now. You know, they'll pass a million things about what these corporations shouldn't, you know, should not be doing. But when it comes to allowing someone to make their own healthcare decisions, it's wrong. And by the way, this really isn't a new topic for me. I mean, law school, one of the famous cases you'll take in any Florida law school is about whether a government entity was allowed to prohibit a person from smoking cigarettes when they're not at work. I find it heinous that a government can fire somebody purely for the reason of smoking cigarettes in their own private time. I think it's wrong. And, you know, I believe in just letting people make their own decisions, individuals.
Can a company make that action?
You know, it's interesting. To be honest with you, I haven't thought about it very much. I do know that no one's complaining about it in the degree that this is. My constituents, which I represent the area just west of Disney, I have a lot of Disney employees, are very infuriated with the fact that they're being pushed around and in some cases fired or threatened with being fired for not wanting to be vaccinated by something that a lot of times they have antibodies for already, which makes it even more
and
a
we'll,
circus act.
We'll have to leave it there. Coming up to a break, thank you, Representative Sabatini, for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Getting lots of tweets about this, too. Here's one quickly. Florida is a right-to-work state. If you don't like mandates, don't work for a large company. Okay, we'll continue the conversation with another member of the legislature, State Senator Tina Polsky. That's next on the Florida Roundup.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. 305-995-1800 to join the show as we talk about the upcoming special session in Tallahassee. Governor DeSantis has called lawmakers back to Tallahassee to pass some kind of legislation that would further crack down on vaccine mandates among large companies in Florida. The Biden White House, of course, Tom, as we've been talking about, says any corporation with 100 or more workers starting next year has to either vaccinate their workforce or have them undergo weekly testing.
And Governor Ron DeSantis suing over that. Let's talk more about the upcoming one-week special legislative session with Senator Tina Polsky, who represents District 29 from Boca Raton. She's a Democrat in the Florida Senate. Senator, welcome to Florida Public Radio. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here with you.
We just spoke with a Republican member of the House, Sabatini, who said that he hasn't seen any specific proposed legislative language yet. Here we are with just 1 week before the beginning of the special session. Have you seen any proposed legislative language for any bills that you're going to have to vote on in a week?
No, no one has, as far as I know. We don't even know which days are actually special session because we were supposed to be there anyway for committee week. So we don't know if our regular committees are meeting, for example, Monday, Tuesday, and then we have special session Wednesday, Thursday. We don't know anything. So you're right, we're only a week away and we don't have any information in front of us.
Is this a usual process for a special session in Florida?
I've only experienced one special session and that was the gaming compact. We did have much more time to analyze that bill. It did arise during our regular session, the gaming bill. I think they changed it around a little bit, but you had the framework. And then we had a couple of weeks to in between the end of regular session and the beginning of special session. So I certainly don't think anyone felt that they were ambushed with something they hadn't had a chance to review. That's for sure.
Do you feel that way?
You know, I don't know if ambush is the right word. You know, we'll see when we get it. If we have a week or so, I think that would be enough time. But, you know, kind of the goalpost keeps changing. At first it was, we're not allowing any kind of vaccine mandate. And then it's, no, now we're going to put a cause of action for employees to sue if they get fired. So we don't have any idea what it's going to be at all. So it's very hard to, you know, start to analyze and prepare your questions. We don't know what committees it's going to go in right. front of. So it might, I might go for special session. It might not be in front of any of my committees. I just wait around until the floor of debate. So that's kind of uncomfortable too, if you don't know if you have a chance to really, you know, dive into it and ask a lot of questions at the committee level, or how many committees it's going to go through before it hits the floor.
The process, it matters. It's out in the weeds, certainly, but it does matter about how the legislation gets made. Senator Tina Pawlowski is with us, District 29 Democrat from Boca Raton, talking about the upcoming special session. Senator, I think you were on the line listening to the conversation with Representative Sabatini, House member, Florida House member, who sees a lot of daylight between himself and the governor on one side and House and Florida legislative Republican leaders when it comes to the appetite for banning, prohibiting private employer vaccine requirements. Do you see a lot of that daylight between what the governor and his core supporters have been calling for and what the legislative leaders, the Republican legislative leaders, have a stomach for?
Well, I'm not privy to any of the conversations, but I can definitely surmise that there is some tension. When the governor announced a special session at a press conference, the news had reported that the Speaker of the House and the Senate President were only told a day before. They put out a statement very quickly thereafter that said they will come up with their own ideas for legislation. That seemed to show a little bit of daylight, as you say, between themselves and the governor. But on the concepts, I certainly think there are issues. I mean, I've been, as a Democrat who has sought to protect workers, not to the detriment of companies, but just general consumer advocacy. I've always been told that we don't want to encourage more causes of action. You know, certain bills that I've had, they said, we're not going to hear that bill. We don't want another cause of action against an employer. Specifically, I have a really important bill that protects employees who use medical marijuana from being fired. And you know, that's exactly what I was told. So here we are, potentially, in this legislation, creating a cause of action for an employee against employer. I've also, you know, understand from the business community that in some ways they like the mandate. They don't want to be the bad guy. They want to be able to say, well, it's not my fault, but the government is requiring me to have all of you vaccinated. Now, remember, it's really not a mandate. It's not requiring you to get vaccinated. If you really have a reason you can't, a medical reason, then you can get tested every week. But, you know, what's wrong with getting tested every week? It's supposed to be inconvenient because we want you to get the vaccine. I also have spoken to the business community and they are frustrated and confused. What do? Do they follow the federal mandate or do they wait to see what Governor DeSantis is doing in yet another one of his many, many, many lawsuits that for the most part he loses or they're in, you know, temporary injunction status. So What's a company in Florida supposed to do? I say they follow the federal law and they do their best to get everyone vaccinated and it's working. You know, these kinds of, as the president said, a deadline helps. You know, they have until X date to get vaccinated and that is helping people move them along and get them vaccinated. And I see lots of posts on Facebook. There's some Facebook groups about, where to get vaccines, people are asking, where do I go in this location, that location? And people are helping people. So there are still people looking for their first vaccination, and we need to encourage that. You know, just one thing I want to say in general about the sort of Republican or right-wing position on vaccines. It's a public health situation. I don't care about individual rights when it comes to making sure that everyone is safe. You may say, I'm not getting the vaccine, I don't want it, but then you could potentially infect somebody who is immunocompromised and not caring about your neighbor, not caring about your community, not caring about your workplace is not the way we're going to get out of this pandemic. And if we treated this whole thing as a community and working together from day one, we wouldn't still be going on 2 years later.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Lots of tweets. Here's just one. Getting vaccinated or not isn't a private decision. It's a public health decision. Being unvaccinated should carry consequences. Senator Polsky, you've been getting death threats. You met with Governor DeSantis' nominee to be Surgeon General a couple of weeks ago, asked him to wear a mask. You're being treated for stage one breast cancer. Dr. Joseph Latipo wouldn't wear a mask. That became a big story. And that has now endangered your security. So this whole political division over pandemic response is actually now putting people in danger. And I was wondering if you could talk about that.
So clearly I'm not alone. I mean, we've seen all the school board meetings. It's all related, right? People are just so up in arms. And it's really about masks, because the school board, it's children wearing masks because the vaccine wasn't available to them. Masks are the only tool that we have at our disposal to help protect these vulnerable children. And people went nuts. And there were many death threats against school board members who all they were doing, all they were elected to do, is protect the safety of students. In fact, one of my fellow colleagues in the legislature is being sued for harassing a school board member. It has gotten so out of control, and it's truly embarrassing. So here I am just trying to protect myself by asking people who visit my office to wear a mask. And I have gotten such vile messages on all social media. And what you're referring to is a voicemail that came in, but there have been several. That was just the only one that, you know, we released because we thought it was important for people to kind of see what's going on out there.
Actually, I think we do. If it's not too late, Peter, I think we do have that audio, the threat that came into your office. If we can play that quickly, please.
I don't care about your f***ing cancer. You go and you huddle with other people without a mask, but then you have a problem with a f***ing Republican? F*** you, you piece of f***. You d- off and die.
So that's the call, Senator.
I didn't hear much of it because it was all bleeped out.
Yeah, and so this, what you're saying, what I hear you saying is that people need to take a breath, and we need to come together to get through this pandemic and have it be over and done with forever. What are your final thoughts as you go back to Tallahassee with your colleagues for this session?
You know, we have to bear in mind that there's an end goal, just what you said, to get through this pandemic. Sitting in special session, arguing about a potential employee not getting vaccinated and what causes of action they may have against an employer who's just trying to do the right thing. And by the way, we didn't talk about healthcare costs. You know, there are people who get double lung transplants from COVID. Who's paying that when you're an employee, you work for Disney? Disney's healthcare plan is paying for that. And where is that going to come out eventually? You know, that money has to be paid up somehow. Is it eventually going to be led to increase in ticket prices? There is a huge monetary cost to this. There's a huge health cost, you know, life-saving cost to this pandemic. And we're going to be arguing about the minutiae of trying
for some time to come. Yeah. Yeah. And not to cut you off. Yeah. Not to cut you off. We're out of time. Senator Tina Polsky, Democrat, Boca Raton, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your thoughts.
You're welcome.
What a jam-packed hour, Tom. The Florida Roundup produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville, WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz, Andrea Podomo, and Sherilyn Cabrera are the producers. Catherine Hobbs is associate producer.
WLRN's director of radio operations and our technical director is Peter Mertz. Engineering help each and every week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Richard Ives answers the phones. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Levos at aaronlevos.com. Thanks for calling and supporting public media in your community. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon.